The following is a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mulman Media Management and staff.
Welcome, this is Joe Poe
and Mary Helen Deere
hosting Kiowa Talk, created by the late J.T. Goombay, our sponsors for Kiowa Talk here on Saturday on New Country 98.5 KACO, Apache Lawton Fort Sill, R. Kiowa's for a Better Future, District 5 Legislator Anita Johnson, District 7 Legislator and Interim Speaker of the Legislature, Jacob Sotai, and Lawrence Spotted Bird, announced candidate for Kiowa Chairman. First part, we've got Jacob giving the open prayer for our show. So, Jacob, take it away.
Oh, thank you, Joe. Let us pray. Aho, Doki, Creator, we come before you humbly, recognizing your spirit and your presence in our lives, thanking you for this beautiful day and the breath of life you've given us to be of service to our people and to one another. We ask your blessings on our elders, our knowledge bearers, language givers, and those who help to preserve who we are as Kiowa people. Be with them and protect them throughout their journey. Be with our families, our Kiowa families, our children, as they continue the process of education. Keep them safe from the ravages of the virus that is still ongoing in our communities. We ask you to give common sense to those who will not allow that wearing a mask is of safety for our community. We ask you to be with those who are in the margins of our society, those in institutionalized, incarcerated, those who are homeless. Be with them as they struggle with life's challenges, with addiction, whatever barriers they are confronting. Help them to meet that challenge and to overcome the barriers. Be with our servicemen and women who are helping to protect our security and our safety of our country. Be with them if they are serving overseas, and be with their families. Be with all of our Kiowa people today, those in need, those who are rising above the challenges they are confronting. Help to sustain them, give them strength to endure their journey. Be with our leadership. Keep them mindful of the that they need to help guide our people and help them to always do the right thing. Keep us mindful that we have to get along with each other, that we must be kind and generous to each other in order to reflect your love and your presence in our lives. Aho, Doki. Amen.
Jacob, thank you for that wonderful prayer. Our next portion of the show is our Kiowa Elder of the Week, which is Mike Dockstader. And Mary Helen Deere is here to conduct the interview. Mary Helen, go ahead.
Hello, Mike. How are you doing today?
Good morning, Mary. How are you?
All right. Right. Well, as I talked to you briefly, we have four segments. And one is to, you know, when you ever meet somebody, you always say, who's your folks? So we start off with, who's your folks? So tell us, Mike, where did you come from?
Well, my grandparents are Bill and Sally Boyney. It's on my mom's side. And then on my father's side, my father, his name is Winland White Eagle. And my grandparents, of course, his parents are Winslow and Jesse White Eagle. And the Ho-Chunk's out of Wisconsin. Of course, on the Kiowa side, you know, born is around Carnegie.
Having been born in a big city and growing up most of your life in a city, they kind of refer to us as urban Indians. And so tell us about how, growing up as an urban Indian, you were also able to learn and maintain your tribal values and teachings.
Well, I was born in Washington, D.C., so yeah, it's a pretty big city. And from there, I think probably the biggest influence, because I did live, you know, in the cities for, you know, most of my young life, especially Oklahoma City. But I think some of the influence I had was, you know, and among Indian people, Kiowa people, you know, you're usually taken by your grandparents at an early age. You know, we're fortunate enough, you know, a lot of us fortunate enough to be raised by our grandparents, you know, I think yourself and, of course, me. But my earliest memory, I guess I'd say when I come to, you know, and start remembering things was with my Grandpa Lynn and Grandma Edna Hardy. And at that time, he had a he was a minister up near Green Bay, Wisconsin. So I can remember being small at that time that, of course, he, you know, he sang a lot. He had a lot to do with our culture and everything. And I remember, you know, early in the morning before, you know, the sun come up, he'd be singing various songs, different songs. So I was kind of exposed to that, you know, at an early age. And then from there, we, my mom and dad came and got me, and I was in, we moved to Cleveland, Ohio. And from that point on, I was, like I said, born in the bigger cities. But along in my teens, I guess, is I just had an urge just to be close to, you know, the powwow life. And I had an urge to dance, and I was probably about 16, 17. And at that time, that's when I joined the Fianta Society. So I really, at that time, I was, you know, living in Oklahoma City and everything. So I, you know, really wasn't out, you know, among the powwow world, you know, where, you know, Carnegie and, you know, places like that, Lawton. But I was able to travel to that. But I think that my, you know, my early years, I think that definitely had an influence on me, you know, kind of, you know, being drawn to back to my culture. And of course, you know, I got a history of singers too in the family. So I kind of was able, you know, to pick up from that and learn from them. And so I think that probably the biggest problem was probably maybe distance, you know, going to powwows. But in the early years, you know, I was at one every weekend, and I guess that's, you know, how it came to be. Just having that early influence, you know, stuck with me.
Didn't you also learn a little bit of the language from Grandpa Lynn? Didn't he teach Kiowa and Lawton?
Yeah, and actually, you know, unfortunately, I didn't really learn to become fluent in Kiowa. But when I took it up in my high school years and started learning some things, one thing I found out was that I kind of had the, I was able to, you know, have the tongue for it. You know, certain words you pronounce, you know, that if you don't speak it, it's hard to get those words out, you know, and say words correctly. And for some reason, I guess when I was, you know, little, I was able to pick up on that. So I never really had a difficult time, you know, pronouncing some Kiowa words. But I can speak a little bit, understand it, but I'm not really fluent at it. So I could still work on that, I guess, you know, and become, you know, more fluent at it, you know, through that. And then also through song, you know, songs that, you know, learned and was sung at the drum, you know, picked up on the language like that. So that also was, like I said, it was also, you know, an influence early in my life too.
Yeah, I know, you know, a lot of the old singers, you know, who have gone on, you know, Uncle Vincent and just different ones like that, you know, that were the teachers. Fortunately, we still have Leonard Jr., Cozad, and, you know, one of the old guys, you know, but Iron and a lot of them that they've walked on and taken all that skill and knowledge with them. But it's up to people like you to, you know, keep it going somehow.
Well, you know, the thing about that is that I came along, you know, singing at that time when, you know, those guys were still around, you know, those, you know, Leonard Jr.'s father, you know, he had some influence on me also. And those guys, you know, in that generation, they, even though I was just starting out, you know, they were very welcoming, you know, to me, and they knew I was just starting out, and they weren't hard on me or anything, you know. They were more helpful. And of course, you know, Junior and, you know, one of my fathers and his brothers and everything, you know, I had a lot of good memories of singing with those guys, you know, and their dad and everything, and of course other older men. And like Uncle Vincent and others too, you know. Very fortunate I come along at a time, you know, when they were still around, because I learned a lot from them that I still, you know, keep with me to this day, you know. And so very, very lucky that I come along at that time, you know, and very fortunate I was able to be touched by those great singers. And I consider them, you know, great singers, you know. And can, you know, still remember things, you know, that they told me then, you know, stories and how things were, and very lucky, you know, that I had that, and not, you know, really, really lucky.
Yeah, we're losing too many of them, and when they go, they take a lot with them in stories and values and teachings. So, yeah, you were very fortunate to be born when you were and to be able to learn those things. But now it's your responsibility to try and pass on what you know. So so what about with the younger people? Talk about them and how different they are and how different they were to grow up from the way you grew up and the opportunities that you had. What would you tell them?
I would say probably, well, for one thing, you know, it makes me happy to see, you know, young ones come up and go to the drum or sing, you know, hymns in church, you know, to whatever nation, whatever tribe they belong to, you know. It's good to see that. It makes me feel good, you know. And so I started young, but not, you know, as young as a lot of them are nowadays. But I would say probably to those starting out, you know, the older ones that are still around, go ahead and you know, take a little time and ask them, you know, how things might have been or how they remember when they were young, you know, because dances, times, they change. And it's different now than when I started. It's the same songs, but yet some things are different. And I'm sure it was different when I started from when my grandparents or uncles, you know, were singing, dancing too. Dress changes, costumes change. So it's good. That's what I wish I had done more of it, is talk to the older ones and get more stories about, hey, you know, how come it's like this? Or what did y'all do then? You know, I was able to catch a few things, learn a few things, but I kind of wish I had, you know, done more, asked more. Because now I realize, you know, just how valuable that was, you know, listening to those people, you know, men or women, and find out, you know, how things were, you know, how do you remember, and get an idea, get a sense of that way it continues, you know, for another generation, you know. Though things change now, through what I was told, I remember what I was told and how it used to be, and I keep that with me. And maybe somebody else told a little bit different, you know, that's okay. That's all right. You know, I just kind of share what I was told, you know, what I know and everything. And so that's probably what I would do to tell the younger ones, you know, something like that, you know, just kind of get with the elders once in a while, you know, the older ones, and say, hey, where did this song come from? Or, you know, what it was like when you started out. You might be surprised, just, you know, what you can get out of it. Very valuable. And it's something that they can tell their grandkids or children someday too, you know, so that it goes on. It keeps going on.
Yeah. 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 It's hard to see, for me, you know, some of the changes. I mean, you look at a group of women standing there, you have no idea what tribe they are, because they have dresses from all different ways or a mixture of different tribal dress. And so you stand there and you think, who are they? You know, what tribe are they? And you can't tell, because everything is mixed. And to me, that's a sadness, you know, because, you know, it's just sad to me to know that we're losing some of that. How about growing up as you did, you know, how did that affect your adult life? What did you do with that, with your teachings and work and that sort of thing?
I think probably like career wise. I think not really so much, you know. I mean, it was kind of like you've got to take. I think you got to live in both worlds. You know, you got to work, make a living, and then you have your cultural life too. You know, so the only bad thing about it was sometimes, you know, I had to work, you know, on weekends, and I had to miss out on a lot of things, I think maybe the fact that, you know, growing up too, you know, you kind of taught a little bit, you know, responsibility, but it's, you know, you just got to find a balance, I think, you know, find a balance between, you know, work and your culture. And that's where I think all of us as Indian people, we're blessed, because we've got both worlds. You know, you pretty much have to live in one. You've got to pretty much go out and earn a living, but not everybody has the cultural background that we do, you know, something we can go to, you know, and be with people, see others around that we haven't seen for a long time, and we're not feeling good, you know, we go and hear the music, and it makes us feel good, you know. We're very lucky in that, you know, we have that support. So the two can work, you know, together, you know, real well, and that's what I kind of found.
So how about some of the stories? Can you share some of the stories that you learned growing up, such as there's a kind of not a real controversy, but there's different stories on, say, for instance, how Taipei began. What were some of the stories you heard about how Taipei began?
Well, you know, of course, there's different variations how I started. The one that I heard was that it was kind of brought about because of a war battle. And I guess in order to kind of remember, kind of like a memorial, a remembrance of that dance, that battle, because I guess there were losses on both sides, and it was kind of a fierce fight. So it's kind of brought about, I guess, to kind of commemorate that time. And so that, you know, also, you know, to bring peace from that point on, you know. And so that's pretty much, you know, the version, you know, that I kind of heard. I wish I had known more about it, you know, and I could, you know, elaborate more about, you know, where, you know, how it started and all this, you know. But even a good, you know, one story that I really kind of still remember to this day was the one at the old Lone Bear Dance Grounds. That's an old dance ground. It goes from way back, you know, from when Taipei stopped, you know, a long time ago before it was revived again in the 50s. And I heard stories about that. And at the time, you know, we were still dancing there.
during Labor Day weekend, a whole lot hasn't changed. I was amazed at the story I was told about how camps were set up, how big they were, where the arena was, similar to where it stood at that time, and brush dance. And it was really, I don't know, it was really nice to hear that kind of story, from those older men who were, young, were boys at the time, grandparents, and uncles and stuff, and how things were. And that story there, that's just, one of them was just, it's the old dance grounds and how things were and everything. And I'm sure, some of my cousins could probably say, I've heard the same thing, and everything. And it's just good to have that, and whether or not that'll ever happen again, I don't know, but it's in my, it's in my mind, in my heart and everything. And anybody wants to know, how things were, well, I'm here, just same with you, you're saying, that, how, you can't identify hardly anymore, dress style. Well, you're available. So hopefully, somebody will come to you and say, hey, how was this? And how were these made? What distinguished this tribe from another, or this family from another? So just you young people, just kind of don't be afraid. Go up to somebody, and talk to them. And they'll be glad to share what they know. It's valuable. It's priceless information. And you'd be glad you did it. Don't wait until later on. I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd do it now,
Yeah, that's what Grandpa Lynn used to say was, don't criticize the young and say, oh, they don't know. Because when you criticize the young and say they don't know, it's your fault because you didn't teach them. So it's a responsibility as we get older to teach and to those that will listen. So, yeah, that's good. Any last word of advice that you would give?
And, added to that, anytime you're learning, you're going to make mistakes. We all make mistakes, And when I first started learning to sing hymns, Kiowa hymns, I started that late, and kind of like, I was like in my late 40s, and I started learning. And I told some of the older women that would listen, to our, we kind of had like classes, hymn classes. And I told them, I said, don't be afraid. I said, if I say something wrong or I pronounce it wrong, you tell me. That's okay, And they were, they had some positive criticism and stuff like that, But I'm glad because I learned to pronounce certain, because a lot of those words that they sing in a lot of those old hymns, and even today's Kiowa, they don't, there's the meaning's kind of been lost, And so, but at least, I pronounce it right, so I pronounce things right, Because if you don't, it gets lost. And it'll never be pronounced, and the meaning will be gone, from that point on.
Okay, well, we're running out of time here, and I really appreciate your being on. It's kind of hard for me, because I'm older than you to think of you as an elder. But I guess that just...
Hard for me to think of myself as an elder now.
But you reach a certain age, and I guess that means you're there. But it's hard for me to look at some of the people that we've had on as being elders, because y'all are still kids to me. But we sure appreciate your being on, and anytime you like to have something to say, just give us a call, and we can work that in. And I appreciate your sharing your experiences having grown up in the city. And sometimes they look down on us urban Indians, that we don't know. But I want you to show, to tell about how you know and how you learned. So we really appreciate your time, Mike. And we'll be talking to you. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Mary. And I appreciate you, asking, for me to share what little I have and everything, and to everybody, and to also to say, to compliment you all on a good job that you're doing on this program. you know, it's really good, really informative, and get to hear and know that y'all are doing, you know, good work. And then to the rest of y'all, you know, all y'all listening and everything, you all take care, you know, be good to each other and take care and take all these precautions from this virus because it's not over. And y'all take care of yourself.
All right, Mike, thank you for taking time out of your day to be on our show. All right, so that was our Kiowa Elder of the Week, Mike Dockstader, and we'll move on to our next part of the show is Lawrence Spotted Bird, announced candidate for Kiowa chairman, is going to discuss for 10 minutes his next plan of action for the Kiowa tribe if he is elected to office. Lawrence, are you there today?
Oh,
Hall.
Greetings and salutations. I'm continuing my discussion on what I see as a starting point for our vision for Kiowa standing together. Goigu, Bake Kale Day. In 2022, last couple of times I discussed how I get the Kiowa tribal government up and going and cleaned up and managed properly by a Kiowa-led management team and things that we'll do there. Also for economic development, a structure and form of Kiowa Incorporated, for-profit Section 17 corporation, again, led by Kiowa. But the third part of what I call a three-dimensional tribe is developing a nonprofit 501c3 corporation, a community development corporation that would take advantage of foundation funding and other grant funds that provide funding to nonprofit 501c3 corporations for the services that they choose to provide. And so the third part of it is what I'm calling Kiowa Community Development Corporation, Kiowa CDC. Again, a nonprofit corporation. And the key component for the CDC is to create what I'm calling the Kiowa Tribal Empowerment Center. And this will be basically a one-stop shop for empowering our tribal members and other tribal people eventually, but focusing on Kiowa tribal members to empower them to stand on their own and provide for themselves and their families with a healthy lifestyle. And this empowerment center will have various services and programs and components in there that will empower our people. You know, a lot of times it's a good thing that we can help our people when they're in need, but it's far, far better, I believe, to empower our people to stand on their own and be able to provide for themselves, for their needs and for the needs of their families. So I want to create this empowerment center for our people. And basically it will have two key components is to support them in their career aspirations, to prepare them for where they are and where they want to be in their career, and identify initially, give them a full assessment on where they are, where they want to be, and identify the steps that they need to take to get there, and identify barriers that will prevent them from getting there and finding success. And we will have the technical support and the financial support to help them address those needs and remove those barriers along the way so that they can achieve success in their career aspirations. But second to that is also there's a lot of people that don't want to work for somebody, but they want to start their own business. And so we also need to have a tribal business development center to help those entrepreneurs, prepare them to know how to run a business, start a business in Oklahoma, and the steps that it will take to find success once they do take the step to start their own business, and also provide them with the capital, access to capital to start their business. So those are the two key components of this empowerment center. But there's also other components that will be either in the center or complementary. We can't ignore, of course, a barrier for a lot of our tribal people, which is alcohol and drug abuse. We need to identify that barrier in their plan and work with them and help them find resources to address and fix that particular barrier that can prevent them from finding success in their life and in their goal, reaching their goal. So we need to address the social issues as well. We can't ignore those. We know that they're there, so let's deal with them and address them and fix them. And so, this, again, these will be part of the empowerment center to, again, build our people up to be empowered, to stand on their own 2 feet and be proud to provide for themselves. And another part of it is to have a venture capital fund to bring outside resources to our communities from outside investors that will invest in businesses that will be located in our communities and employ our tribal people. And so a venture capital fund will help bring outside dollars to start businesses, manufacturing entities in our communities. And again, I, as I said last week, I believe the Kiowas, once we get ourselves structured properly, that we can affect the economic revitalization of our communities. And so we can lead the way, but we have to prepare ourselves and get structured and set up the good plan to do that and have our people lead the way in that. We also need to supplement our housing authority. You know, we get HUD funds primarily to build homes and improve homes, but we can afford, we can develop a for-profit component for housing development and leverage a lot of other resources and outside investor dollars and financing instruments to develop other types of housing. And I'm calling that a housing development corporation, which will leverage things like low-income housing tax credits, for instance. There's a lot of communities that leverage those funding resources to build homes for low-income and medium-income people. And we can use that resource to also build houses, because we're a long way from seeing our tribal members have the sufficient housing that they need. And so we need to focus on that and provide that service and develop an instrument and processes to get more housing to complement our housing authority and the HUD funds that they access. And as I said, I envisioned this, the Kiowa CDC, to be located in Anadarko, and so that our three components, key components, will be in the Carnegie, Hobart, and Anadarko, and of course, affect in the long term the economic revitalization of those three communities that are really in not so healthy economic situation today. And of course, we will never ignore our people that live in other communities and other in the other legislative districts, and those that live in District 7, which are living everywhere, and I guess in the world. We can never ignore our Kiowa people that have needs somewhere else where they live, where they chose to live. And so we must have the ability to connect with our people wherever they are and support them in their endeavors and their needs as well, whether they live in our six districts or in District 7. So, but we can't do that now. We're barely staying afloat as a tribal government under our current leadership, I hate to say, but that's the way it is. And so, but we need to get ourselves healthy, get ourselves strong, be able to gain the confidence of funders, gain the confidence of federal agencies, gain the confidence of ourselves and our own professional people, and entice them to come and help us in our endeavors to provide for our people and build up our tribal government and build up our communities and take care of our people, because nobody can take care of Kiowas better than Kiowas. And the better we can do that, the more success we'll have in that direction. And so those are the three components that I'm going to bring to the table. And like I said before, this is my my outline starting as a starting point. I will include all the tribal members, legislators, and all the key shareholders in helping and being included, including their ideas and their experience to incorporate into a comprehensive strategic plan that we build together, and then we'll implement it together to lead ourselves into the 21st century. We're not here yet. Even though we're in year 2021, we're still not into the 21st century as a tribal government. We're still in the dark ages, I think. I hate to say that, but that's kind of where we are. And so we need to bring ourselves up and get into the 21st century like everybody else and start functioning as a healthy tribal government and use our own people to do that. So that's the three components that I want to introduce to the people. And as we get into it more in depth, we can discuss these things even in more detail. But that's kind of what I have for today.
All right, Lawrence, thank you for those wise words of wisdom and your insight into what would happen into an administration led by Lawrence Spotted Bird. And thank you for your time taken today to be on the show. Okay, we're running out of time on that portion. Lawrence, go ahead to say goodbye, and we'll talk to you next week.
Yeah, right. I hope. Thank you for the time, and I look forward to talking about other things and other needs that we're going to be addressing along the way and how we're going to do that, at least in my mind. And then, of course, as we bring in more professional people, as you guys bring on guests, you know, through the weeks, we know that there's very educated and experienced Kiowa people all over the place, and we just need to bring them home and work together.
Aho. Koigu be kale day. All right, the next portion of our show is we've got Anita Johnson here to discuss current events in the tribe and give her legislative update. Anita, go ahead.
I wanted to discuss a couple of things this morning. One is the KIC meeting. The legislature is in the process of passing a legislative order to call a special KIC meeting since we do not have a KIC coordinator that's active at this point, and Mr. Steve Smith. We're going to try to call a KIC meeting through a legislative order. In the Constitution, it says we have that power to do that through the KIC, and it says as needed. So we're going to use that portion to call the KIC meeting. Or we were talking about this also, we understand that Mr. Geronimo has an office that he is identifying as a KIC coordinator. And so perhaps if he is the bona fide KIC coordinator, that he could take this KIC coordinator and call a special meeting to get prepared for the April 2022 meeting, at which time the business of the KIC can begin again, which needs to be conducted prior to that meeting, which is getting the resolutions, receiving the resolutions, getting those prepared for vote by the people. And so there's two ways to get that meeting, get a coordinator to get that meeting going. And so I'm putting that out there as general information. The other thing is we actually don't have any good communication with the executive branch. And I tried to have a communication with the new executive director, but as I put out my phone call to the executive director, I got a response from his secretary telling me that I couldn't leave a message there. I had to go to the chairman. Per the chairman, I had to go to the chairman's executive secretary and leave a message with her. So I'm really not understanding what the line of responsibilities are within the executive branch, and who's running what. It was my understanding that when we interviewed, that the executive director was going to be responsible for the workings of the complex programs. So therefore, I was going to the executive director. And then I got the message on my telephone that says, don't do that. Don't leave a message for the executive director here at his office. Go to the chairman's secretary. The chairman's secretary is for the chairman. I didn't want to bother the chairman. I want to talk to the executive director. But apparently everything is run out of the chairman's office, even the complex business. So I'm very confused on that. And then we have a meeting scheduled by Mr. Asa Taney, the court administrator, for upcoming meeting on November the 2nd, I believe. And it's at 4 to 6 in the evening. And that's kind of a late time to be attending a meeting of importance as the court is. But apparently that's when the judges can get on a Zoom meeting, which is, it's attainable through the telephone or through the computer. Apparently they're too busy to get on during the daytime. I'm not sure, really. And I'm really confused as to what needs to be done. We've done everything that's humanly possible through the legislature, and I'm not sure what more the legislature can do that hasn't already been done by the legislature. So I'm not too sure what we can do by going to another meeting that's going to extend our hours from 4 to 6. But anyway, that's another meeting that we're supposed to attend or been invited to attend. We have our interim speaker is Jacob, and I have not heard. I didn't want to bother our speaker, Marilyn, because she's still recuperating. And so I don't have any updated health information on Marilyn. I do want to encourage our elders to and those with health issues to go in and take advantage of the booster shots at the Indian Health Service facilities and wherever you get your shots. I'm not sure where that would be other than IHS. That's where I went to get mine. And it worked out just fine for me. And I just want to encourage each and every one of us to stay as healthy as we can. And that's about it. I do believe at this point, I'm trying to hurry up and get off of here, so we can get Jacob on. And if I think of anything, I'll interrupt Jacob.
Okay, thank you, Anita. Thank you, Anita, mm-hmm. for your words. And with that, now we'll move on to the interim speaker of the Kiowa legislature, Jacob Sotai. Jacob, go ahead and take it away.
Thank you, Joe. And we are in the process of working on two items to bring before the legislature for a final vote. We will work on Thursday afternoon to complete, or not complete, but begin to finalize our 2021-2022 budget draft, and we're very near completion of that. We hope that we'll have that ready for vote of during our monthly meeting in November, and we'll see how we can how we will address the specific issues, including one that is really relevant to our Kiowa elders is the $1,000 payment. In our budget proposal, we have included that $1,000 payment and hope that we are able to finalize that, because there's a lot of expectation for that since it was voted on several years ago. And we are, as mentioned, we hope to get that legislative order considered. We'll see how that unfolds in order for us to engage our Kiowa Indian Council as is required by the Constitution. I know many of us are frustrated that we have not been able to meet to consider the business of the council. So we hope to be able to finalize that. Just to reiterate what Secretary Johnson had mentioned. And there's, we do have concerns for the health of our speaker, and ask for prayers, continued prayers for her as she continues to recover. It could be a long and drawn-out process because the body, it varies from individuals, and we don't know how the impact of that surgery, the open-heart surgery, is going to have on her physically. So we ask for continued prayers for her to be able to recover from that effectively. And we are frustrated. We are frustrated, as Secretary Johnson mentioned, that we are not able to have an open communication with any of the executive branch to be able to understand and gain updated information about programs and services of our tribe. One thing that we are considering by our attorney is to file a court order that the executive branch interprets the Constitution as was intended, and that since we don't have an approved budget yet, that we continue utilizing last year's budget amount. And that's from the beginning. Their interpretation is that they're wanting to use last year's budget to the very end, until we have no more money in any of our program categories and line items, which is just silly. It's silly on their part to think that we have to exhaust all of our last year's revenues to have an effective government with services and programs to meet the needs of our people. The intent of the Constitution is to use the budget amounts as a starting point, and they have yet to really think that through. They're telling their program directors that, especially social services, which is such an urgent area of need for our people, that they're out of money. They're effectively telling them they're out of money, when that's not true. When you look at the Constitution, we start over with the amount that was allocated last year, $600,000, I believe, for emergency assistance. So we should have that amount as a baseline until we approve the new budget. And we've increased the amount that will be available in next year's budget draft, and we're hoping that we'll get some cooperation to approve that budget, or we're hoping that we'll get some cooperation within our body to override the veto. We have that power, but we have two members who have been reluctant to support the issues that confront our people by siding with the majority of the legislature. We do have a budget based on last year's figures, so that's a critical area of need that we hope to move forward. And another critical issue that we're still confronting is we're near the end of the distribution of our ARPA payments. We, here in District 7, we get calls every day, and we submit a list to the center with information from those who have yet to receive payment in an Excel file. And we remind them, and we've had to remind them three or four times, the same individual, that they have yet to hear from the center. So communication is definitely a concern. If they would just call people, let them know what is up with their payments, or answer the phone. That's one of the easiest way to remedy some of the frustration is if they would answer the phone that they give out to the public. And certainly to respond to the emails they get and to the list that they receive from our office, just a simple phone call to let them know. And it takes weeks for them to replace checks that have been sent to the wrong address, checks with the wrong name on it, for a number of reasons that the checks were issued incorrectly. And it shouldn't take weeks to get that process done. But that's what our people are experiencing. And so, that system certainly needs to be improved in order for our people to be satisfied with the services they are receiving. And I'm sorry, I apologize as a part of the government that embraces all the programs and services. That we have this type of dysfunction that keeps our citizens outraged, angry, frustrated, and waiting, and keeps them waiting unnecessarily. So we hope that we're very near the end. We've certainly handled several thousand up to now, but now we're continuing to get the same names over and again because they have yet to receive communication or don't know what's going on with their payment.
Hey, Jacob.
That's unfortunate.
So a couple of things. The tribe stopped updating the number of checks that they've printed, and the last update we got is probably 3 weeks ago, and I saw that number was somewhere around 7,400 checks. And have you seen any subsequent numbers that they've printed on the adult checks? Were 10,300 applications in, and so they were some 3,000 checks short. I did see Berdina Codicete did print a Beans check, children's check for 1,500, but with the fantastic communication skills of the Comalte administration, we're all in the dark about what's going on.
That's correct. And no, I haven't seen any recent updates, but they should still be very near the end, just based on logic. You say 7,000. We don't know that there are going to be 10,000 people apply.
I'm not sure that you can apply logic to this administration.
That's consideration. Yes, I agree.
Another thing that I wanted to comment on about this, the social services director saying that they don't have any money because they didn't have a budget. I mean, the Constitution is clear that if they're in lieu of a past budget for this year, all programs are funded at the preceding year's level. So all programs should be funded at the fiscal year 2021 level, and there shouldn't be any lip service provided by anyone.
That's correct, and that's what we're going to seek a declaratory judgment in court to have them assert them. Itself on the judgment of our executive branch, because that's just silly for them not to see that was the intent of our Constitution and not to allow us to run completely out of money and end our services because we don't have an approved budget. We may not have an approved budget until next year. We may go through this whole year without a new budget.
That's right. It's almost like the chairman is throwing a child's temper tantrum because he didn't get his way.
That's correct. Yeah.
Jacob,
despite incompetence, it's also called good financial management according to standard operating procedures.
Another thing.
I believe that.
Go ahead.
No, I just was reiterating her perception. Yeah, I agree.
Another thing, too, do we have now time to forward the agenda of the forensic audit?
Yes, that's included in the budget. And if they don't, and that was included in last year's budget, I believe.
It was.
And if it's not going to be sought, then we can file a court order requiring that as well. So we'll see. Wait and see what happens. But I've got to step off now, so
okay.
I appreciate the opportunity and look forward to next week's program as well.
All right, Jacob, thank you for taking time out of your day to be on our show. We appreciate it. Okay. We've got a few announcements this weekend. The first one, Mary Helen, go ahead. I'll let you go first.
Yes. Today is a 50th anniversary powwow from Oklahoma State University from 12 to 11. So there are vendors, the head staff, and they'll have contests, Golden Age, adults, juniors, Tiny Tots, and a drum contest. So head up to Payne County Expo Center and dance.
And the next thing, we've got the Carnegie Fair powwow today, starting at noon to 10 o'clock. Not responsible for theft or accidents, no guns, no alcohol. There's no food booths and there's no vendors. We have a head staff, Cy Autone, head singer, Sydney Topaw. The co-host is the Carnegie Victory Club and the MMIP Kiowa chapter. Special invite to the Simone Topaw, the Kiowa princess. So all that starts at Carnegie Lower Park at 12 o'clock. As we do every weekend, we want to remind everyone to get vaccinated. Please contact your closest IHS clinic to find out. Koigu Bay Kale Day. Kiowa's standing together. We would like to thank our guest, Mike Doc Stater, for speaking today, as well for all the Koigu people for tuning into our program on KACO New Country 98.5, Apache Lawton Fort Sill. Please pray for the Kiowa people, and as J.T. Goombay would say, Goombay for now.
The previous was a paid program, and the opinions expressed within it are those of the individual participants and not necessarily those of KACO Radio or Mullman Media management and staff.
145 over 92.
180 over 111.
I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest and then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life. Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you, start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
Now I'm, trying to get better, stronger than ever.
Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
One in three adults has prediabetes. One in three. That means it could be you, your football buddy. Your football buddy. Or you, your best man, your worst man. You, your dog walker, your cat jogger. While one in three adults has prediabetes, with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. Take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org. That's doihaveprediabetes.org.
Wait, did they just say one in three adults has prediabetes? That's 33.33333% of adults. That means it could be me, my boss, or my boss's boss, or me, my favorite sister, or my other sister. That's seven members of my 21-person romantic book club. Wait, the one in three could be me, my karaoke partner Carol, or my karaoke enemy Jeff. I'm going to take the risk test at doihaveprediabetes.org.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
The thought of my sons growing up without me inspired me to quit smoking.
I talked to my doctors, and then I threw away all my cigarettes, ashtrays, and lighters.
I started exercising instead of smoking.
Getting support from friends online kept me on track.
Staying away from alcohol when I was first quitting was key.
Instead of smoking after I ate, I'd get up and take a walk.
I missed having a cigarette in my hand, so I'd hold a pen or a straw, anything.
Until I knew I wouldn't give in to temptation, I spent more time with my friends who didn't smoke.
I went to places that were smoke-free.
I didn't stay quit the very first time I tried.
I kept on trying, and I learned something each time.
Do whatever it takes.
No matter how many times it takes.
I quit.
I quit.
I quit.
We did it, so can you.
You can quit. For free help, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and CDC.